This is KMXT Kodiak, 100.1 FM. KMXT is also in HD, and we have HD2 and HD3 as well. We're also streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. Here in Kodiak, it's overcast skies right now, 33 degrees, south winds, 5 miles per hour. It's supposed to start to clear up this afternoon, being partly sunny, with highs in near 37. South winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, becoming northwest in the afternoon, 50% chance of rain and or snow. Tonight's supposed to be partly cloudy, lows in the upper 20s, northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming southeast after midnight. Tomorrow, Saturday, and on Sunday, it looks like highs are going to be in the upper 30s to even up to 40. It's going to be a pretty warm weekend for December, but winds could be pretty strong, up to 30 miles per hour on Saturday, gusts up to 20 on Sunday. There is a small chance of aurora tonight, so if things do clear up, then maybe you can get a chance and get lucky to go see the Northern Lights. For your midday report, we hear a little bit about an explosion in Dillingham set off by the police. More context after NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Israeli military says its troops mistakenly killed three hostages during combat with Hamas militants in Gaza today. Officials say the families have been notified. On CNN this afternoon, Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus, spokesperson for Israeli Defense Forces, said the loss will be investigated but will not affect the IDF's overall campaign to eliminate Hamas.
Even a sad event like this will not shake our resolve, and it will not divert us from the focus, which is clear, to dismantle Hamas.
Civilian toll in Gaza also includes many thousands of Palestinians, spurring more international concern over the scope of Israel's operations in Gaza since Hamas militants attacked southern Israel in October. That's underscored by new revelations about so-called dumb bombs dropped on the Palestinian territory. NPR's confirmed they make up almost half of the roughly 30,000 bombs dropped by Israeli aircraft in Gaza, according to a new U.S. intelligence estimate first reported by CNN. We have more from NPR's Tom Bowman.
Dumb bombs are unguided, meaning they can't hit a target precisely. Human rights groups say their use could explain the high number of Palestinian civilian deaths in Gaza. The death toll in Gaza is nearing 20,000, and most of those are women and children. A U.S. official, however, noted that Israeli pilots are flying low and slow before releasing the dumb bombs in order to carefully hit targets and lower civilian deaths. The official and others are uncertain why Israel is resorting to so many dumb bombs, noting they may be running out of precision bombs. Tom Bowman, NPR News.
The U.S. government is out with its latest snapshot of the number of people in the United States who are unhoused. The report compares January 2023 to a year earlier. As NPR's Jennifer Ludden tells us, the annual count reveals more than 650,000 people were living in tents, vehicles, or shelters.
That number is a 12% jump from a year earlier, but it's not a surprise. Last year, much of the pandemic aid that helped keep people housed ran out. Inflation spiked and median rent hit a record high. Ann Oliva of the National Alliance to End Homelessness says that left many more people cash-strapped.
They are paying much more of their income towards rent than ever before, and that is a driving factor of homelessness.
Much of the increase was those who lost housing for the first time, with a big jump among families and also Hispanic people. A quarter of those unhoused are seniors. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News, Washington.
In a landmark ruling, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights finds that the Guatemalan government violated indigenous rights when it allowed a major nickel mine on tribal land nearly 20 years ago. The issues among several indigenous rights activists have been fighting for decades. From Washington, this is NPR News. Former First Lady Melania Trump has made an unusual public appearance at the National Archives. Today she spoke to some of this country's newest citizens during their naturalization ceremony. Melania Trump, who emigrated from Slovenia, spoke of her own citizenship journey, which began with her arrival in New York City when she was a model. The National Archives preserves presidential documents, some of which figure prominently in one of several criminal and civil cases against former President Donald Trump. The Metropolitan Museum of Art announced it will be returning a number of ancient artifacts back to Cambodia and Thailand. NPR's Mandalit del Barco reports the treasures were linked to an art collector who was charged with selling looted antiquities.
16 works of art are being repatriated to Cambodia and Thailand, including a 7th century head of Buddha and a 10th century goddess statue. The Cambodian government says many of its antiquities on display at the Metropolitan Museum of Art had been taken from the country illegally since the 1970s over decades of civil war and unrest. The U.S. Attorney's Office and Homeland Security Investigation said the works were looted, in fact, quote, shamelessly stolen and collected by art dealer Douglas Latchford. He then donated them to the Met. Shortly before he died in 2020, Latchford was indicted as an illegal trafficker of ancient artifacts. The Met has increasingly been criticized for holding looted artifacts, but cooperated in this latest investigation. Mandalit del Barco, NPR News.
The Dow closes up 56 points to end the day at 37,305. It's NPR.
Support for NPR comes from Neon with Ferrari. Michael Mann's film about Enzo Ferrari fighting to save his empire, his family, and win the biggest race of his career. With Adam Driver, Penelope Cruz, and Patrick Dempsey. Opens in theaters Christmas Day.
And it's 12:06 in Kodiak. I'm Brian Benoit. It's time for your midday report. The Dillingham Police Department and the Federal Bureau of Investigation destroyed explosive material at the city's landfill on Wednesday last week. Dillingham Interim Police Chief Craig Maines said that the material was discovered a few months prior as part of an open FBI investigation.
It was a controlled area. Everything was located and taken into custody and was disposed of.
He says the police held the material in their evidence room until specialists arrived on Wednesday last week to properly destroy it.
It was interesting to see. We placed it behind a nice dirt pile out there at the landfill that they have saved up there for covering waste and stuff. So stood from a safe distance and set it all off, and I guess some people heard it around town.
Neither the FBI nor the Dillingham Police Department stated how much explosive was detonated. The police department declined to describe what the material was that needed to be destroyed. But a city notice to the public said the community members may have heard a boom or felt a jolt or vibrations at the time of the explosion. City planner Patty Buholm says the landfill was a controlled area, and at the time of the explosion, the roadway was blocked off to local traffic. The city said in a public statement that it did not notify the public of the explosion prior to it happening due to concern that people would attempt to gather in the area. In a written statement, Chloe Martin, the FBI's public affairs officer in Anchorage, said that appropriate steps were taken to assess the material in a lab, and now that it has been destroyed, it is no longer a public safety threat. And for a little over a year, a nonprofit called the 907 Initiative has been producing TV and radio spots, digital advertising, newspaper editorials, mailers, and yard signs in Anchorage, almost all of it targeting Mayor Dave Bronson. They look like typical political attack ads, but as Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports, the progressive organization is carefully avoiding the line that triggers campaign finance disclosure laws.
Dramatic music and unflattering photos embellish a recent 907 Initiative video ad.
This year, under Mayor Bronson, Anchorage is setting records for deaths due to homelessness.
There's even a fast-talking legal disclosure at the end.
Paid for by the 907 Initiative, 645 G Street, Anchorage. Approved by Executive Director Aubrey Weaver.
This ad and many others feature the slogan, "Incompetence has a price tag."
You'd probably have a unique perspective on it.
Well, I'm a unique subject matter.
Yeah.
Mayor Bronson says he became aware of the campaign over the summer. He says it hasn't affected him personally.
The message is no more important than the messenger. Find out who they are and where they get their money, and I think that will answer a lot of the questions for you.
907 Initiative founder and executive director Aubrey Weber says the organization advocates for progressive values, but its work isn't about influencing elections. He describes it like this.
Government watchdog, civic advocacy type of organization, and basically work to educate the public on issues, elected officials, and the idea is to reach people on a variety of mediums.
Weber is a former Anchorage Daily News reporter and says the group is advocating for following the law and good governance. Focusing on issues rather than elections is an important distinction. Alaska's campaign finance laws say third-party groups that spend money supporting or opposing someone running for office must be more transparent. For example, they have to disclose who their donors are. Alaska political consultant Jim Lotsfeldt says he thinks the 907 initiative's work is clearly designed to affect public opinion, but it's not electioneering.
We've been running issue ads in Alaska forever on all sorts of things, and this squarely, I think, fits in it. So it feels political, but nonetheless, it's allowable.
Weber says he's consulted the state commission that deals with campaign finance to stay clear of electioneering. He says, like many nonprofits, he won't share much about who is financially backing his organization.
It's a really standard thing. It's a tense environment. I get violent threats on a pretty regular basis. And so try to just minimize the impact of that, I suppose.
He says they have donors from in-state and out-of-state, and started last year without much seed money. He recently hired the nonprofit's second employee. Meta does disclose some spending data about advertisers on its social media platforms. According to the Meta Ad Library, the 907 initiative has spent about $45,000 just on Facebook and Instagram ads in the last year. Putting out mailers and reserving ad time through local broadcasters also often costs thousands to tens of thousands of dollars. A lot of the ads criticize Bronson for the city's snow removal effort after record storms in December 2022 and again last month. Weber says the 907 initiative would have treated a different mayor the same, even if their politics were more aligned with the organization.
If somebody else, another leader, had misstep after misstep, yeah, we would definitely look at that.
Regardless of their politics.
Yeah.
The messaging is getting a lot of attention. During an Anchorage assembly meeting last month, Chair Chris Constant came close to echoing the 907 initiative's slogan during a lengthy dispute over whether the Bronson administration had overstepped its contracting authority.
This, my friends, is the cost of incompetence.
Weber worked on Constant's unsuccessful run for Congress last year. Constant says the similarity between his comment and the slogan were coincidental. He says he isn't part of the 907 initiative. For his part, Bronson says it's just politics.
This is my opinion. They're working to make sure I'm defeated in April. So they're doing what they have to do. You know, they have the right to do that.
Ballots for the April 2nd mayoral election will be mailed in March. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
And in August, the United States Fish and Wildlife Service denied a petition to list the Alexander Archipelago wolf on the endangered species list. It was the third such petition in the last two decades. As KRBD's Jack Darrell reports, part of this latest review included something new, incorporating local indigenous knowledge about the wolves.
In Tlingit and Haida culture, those in the wolf clans are direct descendants of the wolves that stalk the shores of Southeast Silence. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service interviewed nine Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian wolf experts in southeast Alaska to learn more about the species. Environmental groups have tried for years to get the wolves listed as endangered. Most recently, in the form of a petition from the Center for Biological Diversity, Alaska Rainforest Defenders, and Defenders of Wildlife. In their review, Fish and Wildlife had to consider the wolf's cultural and ecological place in its environment. For federal and state agencies, Alexander Archipelago wolf populations are notoriously tricky to estimate. Sarah Markigard, a biologist with Fish and Wildlife, says getting knowledge from those that live close to them helped.
So we learned a lot about wolf abundance there, and we even received quantitative information that we were able to use in our population models. So that was kind of unexpected and an amazing addition to what we knew.
At a federal seminar on the wolves, Dr. Stephen Langdon, an anthropologist, called this project nothing short of revolutionary.
I'd like to thank the indigenous experts that participated for this really important and I think groundbreaking path-cutting acquisition and utilization of indigenous knowledge going forward. You guys made it possible to make a very significant path-breaking effort in that regard.
In a later call, Langdon says this is one of the most robust uses of ecological indigenous knowledge in a federal policy decision that he's seen. And he says how it was used is especially important.
They drew on that knowledge, and the knowledge was actually quoted, which is, in other words, it wasn't paraphrased. Okay, it was actually brought in on a quote basis, which I think is an important point of emphasis.
The indigenous science within the report details overlap between southeastern wolves and their larger, shaggier cousins, Yukon timber wolves, something that came as a shock to Langdon, Markigard, and the Westman scientists. In the report, signs of Yukon timber wolves were seen in the Haines and Yakutat areas, and evidence that local wolves had bred with them were seen as far south as Metlakatla. Tim Ackerman grew up tracking timber wolves across Alaska's interior. He's a Tlingit storyteller in Haines.
Now, all these trails lead up into the interior, into the Yukon. So as animals migrate back and forth, I'm sure the Yukon wolves come down this far, you know, and intermingle with the southerly packs.
Ackerman says as a lifelong trapper, he's observed these wolves in their natural habitat for as long as he can remember.
You know, it really helps that I come from Alaska and been here all my life, and I know I see things and observe animals. You know, who's to say that he can tell me that that wasn't what I saw kind of thing?
Ackerman says wolves are crucial to the health of the deer population and always have been. This animosity towards the wolf, the constant debate about population density, they're Western problems, he says.
The perception of Western society looking at these animals as a pest, basically, you know, the scary wolf, the gonna eat all the cows, kill all the cows, kill everything kind of thing, you know, when they poison them, trap them, shoot them.
Scott and Michael Jackson are distant relatives who live in Cake. Michael Jackson is a Tlingit elder. He says humans and wolves are inextricably linked in Southeast Alaska.
Growing up around wolves, we knew them intimately, and they have a part in our lives because they kind of control, as we do, try to control them. They control the bounty of the deer and moose that we have.
Scott Jackson is a master wolf trapper. He says, without trapping to thin the population, wolves decimate the deer population, the same deer that his community relies on for food. For Jackson, helping state and federal managers was about striking the right balance.
So it was more about helping control the island and helping put it back in a positive manner.
Last year, the Biden administration released formal guidance on incorporating indigenous knowledge into scientific practice to inform federal research, policy, and decision-making. Across federal agencies, advocates say it's an attempt to remedy prior dismissals of this form of knowledge and strengthen the nation-to-nation relationship with tribes. Wolves are smart. Scott Jackson says if you capture them or put up a bunch of trail-marking tape in an area, they'll stop going there. He says we study the wolves to learn how to manage them in their natural habitat, but the act of studying them can affect that habitat.
We work with biologists. That's how we maintain the balance. I think leveling on both sides, what I'd like to see is people to continue to study, people to continue to trap, my friends, myself, kids. I have a hard time seeing it go on the endangered species list.
Jackson says he hopes the new guidance on acknowledging indigenous expertise will help shape future policy. He says he'd like to continue trapping and teach his sons that there needs to be balance and respect. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
And that's it for your local news. Thanks for tuning in. I'm going to pass it to Bradley Cobbin for the Island Messenger after Marketplace Minute.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
Mortgage rates are at their lowest since August. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. The average interest rate on a 30-year home loan fell just below 7% last week, according to mortgage giant Freddie Mac. This is the seventh consecutive weekly decline. That tracks a retreat in the benchmark 10-year Treasury yield amid expectations that the Federal Reserve is done raising interest rates. Investors are also talking rate cuts next year, but today New York Fed President John Williams tamped down expectations, telling CNBC that talk of cuts was premature. Federal officials say 48 injectable drugs covered under Medicare Part B were overpriced in the last 3 months. They're ordering drug companies to pay rebates starting in January under authority granted in the Inflation Reduction Act. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, everyone, and happy Friday. Finally, it is the end of the week. Here is your middle of the day Island Messenger. So let's start off with the weather, taking a closer look at it. It is currently 33 degrees, overcast, western winds at 5 miles per hour, with wind chill at 28. For this afternoon, there is a 20% chance of rain before 3 p.m., partly sunny with a high near 37, and western wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. For tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 29, northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming southeast after midnight. And tomorrow, rain and snow is likely before 9 a.m., and then rain. High near 40, southeast wind 15 to 25 miles per hour, becoming south in the afternoon, and winds could gust as high as 30 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation for tomorrow is 100%, and there's little or no snow accumulation expected. So enjoy the niceness today while you have it. Our internet's back, so I finally have the marine synopsis that I did not have this morning for Island Messenger. So the synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, Kodiak Island waters, and Cook Inlet: a 1,006 millibar low near Prince William Sound dissipates as it moves towards Yakutat by Friday afternoon. A 1,001 millibar low forms near Castle Cape Friday morning, then moves to 120 nautical miles southeast of Cape Clear at 1,010 millibars on Saturday morning before dissipating at 975 millibars. Bering Sea low, moving into southwest Alaska, pushes its front across the Gulf from Saturday morning through Sunday morning. And then for Marma Island to Sitkanak, out to 15 nautical miles, there is a gale warning for Saturday. Today, there'll be south wind at 25 knots, becoming western 20 knots in the afternoon with seas of 8 feet, freezing spray and snow. Tonight, north wind at 15 knots, becoming northeast 25 knots after midnight with seas of 7 feet. And tomorrow, southeast wind at 35 knots, becoming southwest in the afternoon with seas of 10 feet and rain. For Marma Island to Sitkanak, from 15 to 85 nautical miles, again, there is a gale warning for Saturday. Today, there will be south wind at 30 knots with seas of 10 feet with rain and snow. Tonight, north wind at 15 knots, becoming eastern 25 knots after midnight. North of Dangerous Cape, north wind at 20 knots with seas of 9 feet. And tomorrow, southeast wind at 25 knots, becoming southwest 35 knots in the afternoon with seas of 12 feet and rain. For Chiniac Bay, there is a small craft advisory on Saturday. Today, there will be south wind at 20 knots with seas of 3 feet and freezing spray and snow. Tonight, northwest wind at 15 knots, becoming northeast 10 knots after midnight with seas of 3 feet. And tomorrow, southeast wind at 15 knots, becoming south 30 knots in the afternoon with seas of 11 feet. For Marmot Bay, again, there is a small craft advisory on Saturday. Today, southeast wind at 20 knots, becoming west in the afternoon with seas of 5 feet, subsiding to 3 feet in the afternoon and freezing spray with snow. Tonight, northwest wind at 10 knots, becoming eastern after midnight, seas at 3 feet. And tomorrow, southeast wind at 20 knots in the morning, increasing to 30 knots with seas of 11 feet. And finally, for the Shalikov Strait, there is a gale warning on Saturday. Today, there'll be southeast wind at 15 knots, becoming western 20 knots in the afternoon with seas of 4 feet, freezing spray, and snow. Tonight, northwest wind at 15 knots, becoming eastern 20 knots after midnight with seas of 3 feet, building to 5 feet after midnight. And tomorrow, eastern wind at 35 knots with seas of 9 feet and rain. So that is our marine forecast for today and tomorrow. Let's take a look at the tides. So it's currently 12:24. So we are currently in a low tide of 3.1 feet. Our next high tide will be at 2:52 p.m. of 10.3 feet. The next low will be at 9:57 p.m. of negative 1.4 feet. The next high will be at 4:32 a.m. of 7.4 feet. And the next low will be at 9:37 a.m. of 3.1 feet for the Kodiak side tides. For the Western Bay, Western side tides in Larsen Bay, we are currently in a low tide of 4.3 feet. The next High tide will be at 3:27 p.m. of 15.6 feet. The next low will be at 10:21 p.m. of negative 2.4 feet. The next high will be at 4:49 a.m. of 12.8 feet. And the next low will be at 10:23 a.m. of 4.46 feet. And now for community announcements. There is quite a few things going on this weekend here in town, which is very exciting. It's always mid-December holidays. So many things are happening. It's so fun. I love December. It's one of my favorite months of the year. For this weekend, tomorrow, the Filipino American Association of Kodiak cordially invites you to their annual Christmas party. The potluck and program will take place at the Ed Harmon Armory Building on 125 Powell Avenue on Saturday, December 16th from 6 to 9:30 p.m. Please come and join us in this joyous evening of delicious food, dancing, singing, games, and prizes. And the attire for this event is semi-formal, formal, and traditional Filipino. The City of Kodiak and the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce invite you to the city's annual Christmas tree lighting ceremony tomorrow, Saturday, December 16th at 5 p.m., downtown at the Harbor Masters Building with Christmas carols performed by the Kodiak Community Choir. And then immediately following the Christmas lighting, the Christmas tree lighting, the Kodiak Maritime Museum's annual Harbor Lights Boat Parade starts at 6 p.m. on Saturday, December 16th, with decorated boats parading south through the Near Island Channel to Pier 2 in the St. Paul Harbor. A Harbor Lights community reception with cookies and beverages runs from 5 to 9 p.m. at the Canna Marketplace. For more information, contact the Kodiak Maritime Museum at 907-486-0384 or info@kodiakmaritimemuseum.org. That'll be a fun process of things to do. You go to the tree lighting at 5 and then immediately hop right on over and go see the Harbor Lights. I try to do that every year if I can, if it's on the same day. And I'm going to try really hard to do that tomorrow, too, because I think it'll be a lot of fun. It's a great way to end your week and start your weekend. Next up, caregivers of Kodiak's youngest community members are invited to the Diaper Distribution Center for free diapers and wipes on the fourth Friday of every month from 4 to 7 p.m. Diapers are available in all sizes on a first-come, first-served basis while supplies last, and size swaps are welcome. Bring outgrown diapers in good condition and trade them in for your baby's current size. Located at 1910 East Resinoff, the Diaper Distribution Center is a ministry of Frontier Southern Baptist Church, and the next distribution Friday will be Friday, December 22nd from 4 to 7 p.m. The Hospital Holiday Trees, Angels of Love, place your loved one's name on an angel for display on these Hospital Holiday Trees, displayed in the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center from November 25th through January 13th. Honor the life of someone you miss and celebrate the life of someone you admire. And finally, our last community announcement for today. Join us to talk about community support and caring for those with dementia on Friday, December 15th at 1 p.m. at the Senior Center, so here in just about a half hour. Respite care is provided for loved ones, and this is open to families, friends, and care providers and personal care assistants. For more info, please call Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak at 907-512-0600. And that is about all the time we have today for The Island Messenger. Go ahead and stick around for Byways and our Spotlight. It'll be a lot of fun.
Listen for The Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the December 15th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Seems like Mother Nature is determined to give us a taste of every variety of winter weather this month. Cold and windy, warm and rainy, and snowy, of course. As often is the case, wind seems to almost be the guaranteed factor in this December's weather. In spite of the weather challenges, we have had some spectacular days. Perfect for getting outside to enjoy walks on the beach, snowshoeing on the mountainsides, or skiing at the golf course or Pyramid Mountain. Hope you have a chance to get out and enjoy those days. Kodiak has some great holiday traditions, and there are a few of them happening this weekend. First, there's the Nutcracker, presented by Next Step Dance Kodiak. Shows are at 7 p.m. on Friday and Saturday evening at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Tickets are available at the door or at the Next Step Dance Kodiak's website. On Saturday, the Kodiak Maritime Museum's Harbor Lights Festival starts at 5 p.m. with a reception and cookies and beverages in the marketplace downtown. The reception is open until 9 p.m. At 6 p.m., don't miss the boat parade in the channel. The boats start near Shahafka Cove and head south through the Near Island Channel, past the ferry terminal, all the way out to Pier 2. There are many places along the way to watch the parade with your friends and family. Enjoy! And of course, one of the biggest things to celebrate this coming week is winter solstice on Thursday, December 21st. On that very short day, we have 6 hours, 30 minutes, and 45 seconds of daylight. By the 22nd, we only gain 2 seconds, but by the end of the month, we're gaining almost a minute and a half per day. Not too shabby. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.